This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Lee Fredrickson. Lee is the managing partner at Hinge. Lee, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you. Tell us a little bit about you and about Hinge, please.
Well, I have a unusual background. I grew up as a farm boy. My career is as a psychologist, but I'm actually an entrepreneur, and I've enjoyed starting and running multiple businesses over the years and really found that my love is strategy and marketing, and that's how I got involved with Hinge.
Well, there you go. My degrees are in American literature, so I kind of backed into this, too.
Don't we all?
I'm not quite sure if anybody actually starts off to be a marketing professional, but it's, you know, it's an addiction. So
there you go.
So let's a little bit of background on Hinge, where you seem to hang your hat most of the time anyway these days.
Yes. Well, Hinge is a branding and marketing firm, and we work exclusively with professional services organizations. So IT contractors, management consultants, architects, engineers, accounting, everybody who provides their services, either they're someone who is a licensed professional or they require a lot of training to be able to do it. And that's our exclusive area of focus.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming you find people because you produce a fair amount of content.
We do. And interestingly enough, we have clients from all over the country. I would say about 80% of our clients are from outside the Washington, D.C. area. But we find clients primarily through the content that we publish, and people tend to contact us when they have a problem that falls within our area of expertise.
Okay. So the you're primarily branding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do when people get in touch with you, do they understand intuitively the concept of differentiation, or do you have to start an education process there?
Some people seem to understand that you need to differentiate, that it's important, but where it seems that the most of the problem is it's very difficult to do with professional services. It's a challenge. So people end up saying the same thing, like, you know, we really care about our clients, we've got great people, we're really dedicated, you know, those kinds of things that while they sound good and they may be 100% true, they sound an awful lot like what every other professional service firm is saying. So they end up having these faux differentiators or fake differentiators that aren't really true.
Right, and a lot of them sound really like platitudes and not like a platform.
Exactly. That's precisely it. So people who are listening to it tend to ignore it, and then they end up being forcing their firm to be generic with no differentiators, and then they end up just competing on price or something along those lines, which is exactly what you do not want to do as a professional service firm.
Exactly. So you and I share kind of, I'm assuming, as a passion for you, because this is really one of the first times we've spoken, but a passion for the concept of thought leadership and teaching people the elements of it. But you have to be fairly selective about the people you work with when it comes to a topic like that.
Well, it is. Fortunately, in most of the professional services, you know, what you're really selling is your expertise and the skills of the people you're doing. So sharing that through educating them and helping them understand what you do actually is very helpful in two ways. One, it shows them what you want, and it attracts the right kind of people. But it also it tells people what you're not. In other words, it's just as important to rule out the kinds of people who will not be a good fit for your services as it is to find those who are the ideal match. And we find that when people focus that way, it makes it a lot easier for them to market, and they actually end up growing faster, and their firms are more profitable.
Okay. Do you ever have companies come to you where you are not comfortable working with them because they really are run-of-the-mill?
Yes. We can work with them if they do have a desire and an interest and are motivated to become different in some way. But if they are just interested in being run-of-the-mill, or they just think that all marketing is just putting some pretty pictures and some words that sound like everyone else's, then we don't work with those kinds of folks.
Okay. Well, one of the things, the main way I found you is content. Some of your content, I think a fair amount of your content has been posted in venues where I tend to hang out, and that's like LinkedIn. I believe I may follow somebody from Hinge on Twitter. But it's the content, and I started reading the content, and I enjoy reading thoughtful commentary on things of interest, and a lot of the things that that you write about at Hinge are topics of interest to me. So let's talk about a couple of the elements of subject matter expert, thought leader, or as you call them, visible experts.
Okay.
So let's talk about content first.
Okay.
I shot you an article earlier this week about when does influence migrate over to plagiarism. You know, the concept of there's nothing new under the sun has been there forever because it's true. But when does borrowing lightly tend to cross that line?
Well, I think it's there is pretty well-established parameters about what is acceptable and what isn't. And, you know, I came from an academic background, and they're borrowing from other people or citing their research is a time-honored and something you do. So I think it crosses the line at the point at which you're borrowing an idea or a phrase or something, and you're not giving credit to the appropriate author of that. And, of course, that is lazy, short-sighted, illegal, immoral, and all the other things you can throw at it.
Right.
You know, it's whereas, you know, taking someone's idea, sharing them, giving them appropriate credit for it is not only a good thing to do, a preferred thing to do, but it actually enhances the reputation of the person who's sharing it. So it's... It's almost, you know, doing it the wrong way hurts you in so many ways. It's hard to imagine why people do it other than just greed and laziness.
No, there you go. But it happens.
It does, unfortunately.
And you know, some phrases, you know, Blanchard's catching people doing something right are so innocuous at this point. You know, they're just so widespread that you have a lot of people don't even know who Ken Blanchard is.
Right.
Number one.
Right.
So they just think, you know, maybe that's out of the Bible or something.
Yes.
Maybe a business
yes,
Bible.
Yes, indeed. And that's one of the, you know, the paradoxes of thought leadership, and actually one of the things people are afraid of. And, you know, there's a lot of concern, like, well, what if I give my ideas away? You know, I don't want to give my good ideas, then people won't need to use me. You know, that, you know, we tell someone how to do something, then they won't need to hire me. And, of course, that is completely short-sighted, and there's a parameter around that, and that is that if the person can do it themselves, just with someone telling them how to do it, then you really don't have much of a business in the first place. you know, and they're really not your client. So you end up educating a lot of people and educating competitors, but those clients that you do get from that want you for what you do. So they tend to be very good mixes. And interestingly enough, we find out that by sharing this content, we actually get referrals from competitors from other parts of the country who are do something but don't quite do what we do, or get a project that's a little bit too complicated for them. So you think you're helping the competitors, but in reality, if the truth is told, you actually end up helping yourself by sharing a lot of what you do.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing about over 50% of the inquiries that come in to my company are for things that I don't do. I am a marketer in the government arena, but I don't do contracts. I don't help people with certifications, DCA audits, etc. So I have an inner sanctum, if you will, a group of people that I will refer business to on a regular basis. But those are the experts in those various other disciplines. Mm-hmm. And it always comes back.
Yeah, exactly. And when you've been in the business one way or another, you learn that it eventually always comes back.
Right.
Now, obviously, if there is something that is truly, truly a secret or truly a piece of code or something that can't be shared or something, then that's a different story. But, broadly speaking, it's the more you share and the more you help people, the more you grow and the faster you grow in return.
Right. Okay, let's take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back after this and pick up on that thought and a few more. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with Lee Fredrickson. Lee, what's your website? Tell the people, please.
It's hingemarketing.com.
H-I-N-G-E marketing.com.
Right, just like the thing that helps you open doors.
Yeah. Now, the concept of sharing, I've run across a variety of people over the years who swear that their stuff is unique. Now, I don't know about you, but I've run across very, very few things unique in the 30 years I've been doing this.
Right. Right. And the, it doesn't have to be unique to be valuable. That's the one thing that people don't understand, that they think that thought leadership is really about showing that you're the smartest computer programmer in the room or the smartest architect. It's in many ways, it's really not. What it is taking, it's more akin to taking complicated, hard to understand subjects and translating that into something that someone can understand, they can think about, they can see how it applies to their situation. So it's as much about reinterpreting and understanding and putting ideas together as it is with coming up with something that's completely novel.
Okay, well, that leads very nicely into what I want to talk about next, and that is the concept of content. What is it, and what is the value for virtually any company, especially your service clients?
Well, content really has kind of become a term of art in marketing that refers to any kind of educational information that you're providing to potential clients. So it can be webinars, it can be blog posts, it can be ebooks, white papers, anything along those lines. And of course, that's been around in many forms. Seminars and so forth has been probably since the beginning of professional services. People have been doing those kinds of things. But what's really changed is that with the ascent of the internet, it's so much more widely available, and there are so many additional ways of sharing it that it has become from something that was part of a program to being something that can literally, drive the growth of an entire firm. And that's kind of been a revolution, which is I think kind of snuck up on some people, and they haven't really seen it coming.
Okay. So when you have your blog, and I visit it as often as I visit any blog out there, which I don't visit that many. Okay. So it's on a short list, but you know, one of your coworkers, a friend of mine, Chris Rand, always pings me when there's something there that he knows I'll be interested in. But so we have the blog, we have the webinars. What's your thought on taking virtually the same content and using it in multiple formats?
Important to do that. And by virtually the same content, we're not talking necessarily about word for word, but people process information differently. There are some folks that like to see something on video, that want to get a quick overview. Others like to read a short piece on it, just give me the high points. Others are interested in a more in-depth look at the topic. So dealing with a particular topic, there's a lot of different ways to do it, and the more ways you do it and the more ways you share it, the more accessible it is to people. So it's perfectly acceptable and it's perfectly appropriate to make the same content available, the same topic areas available in different kinds of formats.
Okay. That's very, very similar to, or actually the same thing that I tell my clients. It's okay to repurpose information because, you know, but it's apparent that you have the psychology background because of how you phrase that. So people do absorb information differently. And, you know, witness the explosion of people listening to information on their you know, through their earbuds.
Exactly.
We've a number of Federal News Radio shows have been available on iTunes on and off for years. I didn't know that for a while until somebody told me that's how they listen to my show.
it's really true. It's those kinds of preferences. And of course, there's also generational changes too. Is that the younger generation seems much more inclined to watch something on video? That's what they've grown up with, and that's just that's the way that they're most comfortable in terms of receiving information. So you have it's this perfect storm of the technology allows you to share it in different ways, and the audience is growing and ready to hear it in different ways.
Well, maybe that's why YouTube is the second most used search engine on the web.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, find a major company out there that doesn't have a YouTube page.
Yes. And I think there's also something that, Mark, that I think is important here for people to understand how content works and how content marketing works, because one of the things we get a lot is people say, well, you know, my clients don't listen to the radio. They don't go online. They're not going to look for me online. You know, I'm a federal contractor. I've never gotten any business, and I don't expect I ever will. However, what they're not taking into account is while they may not be doing the solicitation for a contractor online, how are people learning about issues? You know, how are they learning about cloud computing or IT security or, you know, any of the hundreds and hundreds of issues that are driving change? People are attending webinars, they're searching online, they're delegating this to someone on their team who's going around and searching online and attending webinars. And so the information gets to the decision makers in ways that people don't often understand. You know, and we've seen that over and over again where, we will get a call from someone and they say, well, you know, one of our associates ran across a book and gave it to one of the partners who gave it to the other partners, and that's why I'm calling you.
Yeah, the book thing I find pretty cool because I have a radio show and I've interviewed a number of authors, now you among them. I have publicists who will send me an email and say, hey, I want to send you this book. And I get probably 25 books a year that way that I would not have known about otherwise. And doesn't mean I'm going to interview everybody, but you know, it certainly improves the chances. But you know, and here's the issue: a lot of the books may be well written, but the content is, you know, passe, a rehash. What would you think? What do you think the elements of good content are?
Well, I think that there are a couple of elements that I think are pretty reliable that make for good content. One of them is providing new information that sheds light on an important issue. In other words, new research on something that changes your view of it. For example, we did a study of 500 professional service firms, and we found that those that got half or more of their leads online grew 4 times faster than those who didn't get any leads from online sources. And not only that, they were also twice as profitable. So right away, that, you know, that changes how people think about something, and that opens the line of discussion. So I think that's the kind of thing, a piece of original research that addresses an unanswered question or provides new data on something that people are concerned about. That's one thing that makes for good content.
Okay, I interviewed Julie Weeks, who does the research for American Express Open a couple weeks ago. She does the research on small business contracting, and one of the cool, I've had her on the show 3 times now, and the first report came out, it documented that it takes roughly 19 and a half months for a company that's focused on government business to win government business. And the thing that, you know, that result didn't surprise me, but it was nice to have an official research statistic behind it finally.
Yes, exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah, and there were a number of other parts of the report, the out of pocket or company expense expenditure that goes along with that, that really, you know, kind of turned on a few extra lights as well.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing. I mean, usually this kind of research, it reinforces some ideas that you have or some things you know on one level, but it's like, okay, now that makes sense. And it helps you make business decisions. It helps you make choices. So it's a very valuable thing.
Well, it goes from anecdotal to really demonstrated. So
yeah, and that's the thing with this. You know, as human beings, we're very good at taking anecdotal evidence and rationalizing when that's true. So, you know, we can, with a straight face, we can hold beliefs that, you know, birds of a feather flock together and opposites attract. You know, we can think both of them are true when they're diametrically opposed. You know?
Right. Okay. We're going to take our next break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Lee Fredrickson. He is a managing partner of Hinge Marketing. You can find him at hingemarketing.com. You have a newsletter there that goes out, was it monthly?
Yes.
Okay. And the blog you can find there as well. I want to pick up on the thought that you had last segment about the companies that are generating more qualified leads online and closing more business. How much of that online activity involves the use of content that's pertinent? So, I mean, we have a findability factor here. So being online is one thing. Being findable online is something completely different.
Right, exactly. Well, when you look at how people are actually doing it, and as part of the study, what we did was we looked at 15 common things that people do online to generate leads, like LinkedIn, blogging, search engine optimization, and a whole range of things. So we could actually figure out those that were successful and were doing it, how were they doing it? And what we came up with, when we looked at the data, was that when you piece it together, it's fundamentally a content marketing approach. In other words, the single most important thing online for generating new business is search engine optimization, being found. In other words, when someone is puts in and Googles the term cloud computing and security, they find you. And right after that comes blogging and the use of other kinds of content like white papers and webinars and so forth are all an integral part of being found and being successful online.
Okay. So what percent of the success of those online companies do you think is built around the it's not just the content, it's the refreshing of the content.
Right. Exactly. It's the content, it's the promotion of that content so it gets out and the person can actually find the content. It is the ability to, when a person comes to your website, having something else for them to sign up for so you can begin a dialogue with them. And it's all of those elements kind of together that make it work. If you don't do any one of them, it's not going to be successful. So it's just like the thing about, well, which wheel in your car is most important? And the answer is the one you don't have. You know, so it's, if there's an element missing, it's not going to work.
Okay. So we have content as a differentiator, generating leads, so online. What about leveraging other people's content? Not like we referred to earlier, but commenting on other people's stuff, taking it and extrapolating on it. Is that a legitimate form?
It's absolutely legitimate form of content marketing. Matter of fact, there's a name for it. People have called it curation, where you go out onto the internet with its unbelievable flow of content, and you find those things that are most of interest to your audience, and you put them together in one convenient place for them to review and to look at. And that is a very time-tested approach to help to track folks to your to your website and to your firm and the kinds of things you do. So it's an important element of it.
Okay. So we've talked about all these things, and you intimated in the online portion various venues for sharing the information once, driving people to your website. Let's talk about the venues for posting and sharing. A couple of times in our conversation so far, LinkedIn has come up, and I am a huge proponent of LinkedIn. It's obviously not the only social network out there, but I think it's the most viable social network for business-to-business professionals, and I'd like your take.
That's absolutely correct. It is consistent with what our research has shown, that the firms that are growing the fastest tend to be higher users of LinkedIn and find it more effective. So it in and of itself is a great approach. It's not the only one, though. The one that is closest to it is Twitter. Now, Twitter has a completely different feel from LinkedIn, and it has a different purpose, but it adds the reach. In other words, with Twitter, it's easier to get to a broad audience faster. So generally, a lot of firms are combining LinkedIn and Twitter as kind of a 1-2 punch for their social media. The Twitter gives them the reach, and the LinkedIn gives them more the depth and the substance to their interactions online.
Okay. Now, when you say reach, I have, at present, I have about 5,500 direct connections on LinkedIn. Through my group's activity, I have reach to probably another 150,000 or so people. On Twitter, I think I have maybe 1,500 followers. So extrapolate the reach for me there.
Well, generally, Twitter is easier to accumulate followers, so you're probably someone who is focused more on LinkedIn than they have on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And so some folks get a fairly substantial reach with Twitter, but the thing about Twitter is that the whole culture on it and the kind of the approach is one of sharing. And so it's easier, it seems, to have something kind of go viral or getting shared more widely in the Twitter universe than it tends to be in the LinkedIn universe.
Okay.
So that's why it tends to help on the Twitter. And, you know, the interesting thing on Twitter, too, and LinkedIn, is that some people who you can't access directly, you can't call them up, you can't send them an email and expect to get them, you can actually end up starting a relationship with them on Twitter more easily than you can on other kinds of approaches, oddly enough.
Hmm. Okay. When you reach out to find those people on Twitter, do you generally find them there?
Oftentimes. The normal thing you would do when you're looking to connect with someone is you find out where they are now. You look and see if they're on Twitter and see if they're on LinkedIn, and usually people will tell and share where they are, and then it's just a matter of going there and getting the dialogue started.
Getting in front of them.
Yeah, and of course, you know, starting the dialogue is only that, just starting the dialogue, just as it would be, you know, if you met someone at a networking event. It's not the end of it, it's just the beginning.
Okay. Does Hinge use either Facebook or Google Plus?
We use both of them. Google Plus is particularly important when you're looking for your search engine optimization. Since it is a Google social network, they have set it up so that it is very helpful to your rankings on search engines and so forth. So being on Google Plus is a good thing for your rankings, although it doesn't have the same kind of widespread use and familiarity with business people that LinkedIn does. So it's more of a defensive move to help you with your search engines at this point. Facebook. Facebook is interesting. For some audiences, Facebook is a primary kind of a business destination. For example, the not-for-profit world and the educational world tends to will much more likely be on Facebook than they will on LinkedIn, for example.
Right.
But we use it primarily to kind of convey our culture and for recruiting. We don't get a lot of clients directly from there, but it's a great way for people who are thinking about joining us or trying to check out the firm to learn a little bit about, you know, what we're like and what it's like to work at Hinge.
Ah, cool. Okay. We're going to take our last break here. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. After these messages, we will take a look at one of Lee's recent blog posts. You're listening to AmTower Off Center. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Lee Fredrickson. You can find him at hingemarketing.com, or you can find him on LinkedIn. You can find him on Twitter. Facebook and Google Plus too, apparently. Go to the website, hingemarketing.com, because what we're going to talk about in the final segment is a recent blog post. Put the blog on your must-read list. So the blog deals with five facets or five best branding tools your firm should consider. So the first, and this is going to be kind of a recap, but I really like this post. So so let's start with number one. Start with your differentiator.
Mm-hmm. Tremendously important. Difficult to do. Usually the best way is to start by interviewing and understanding what your audience sees, because we a lot of times miss what our key differentiators. Easiest type of differentiators for professional service firms is specialization. and having a clear focus, a clear specialty that you do, and that you try to be better than anybody else at that particular specialty.
Okay, so give me an example here. Broad, narrow, what specialized?
A good example is one accounting firm we're familiar with specializes in working with expats who are in the area. There are tax issues, all of the issues associated with that. That's a good example of specializing by a target audience.
Boy, one wouldn't think the audience would be huge, but perhaps I'm way off base there.
That's correct. It is. It's a very interesting audience with very identified, and once you get in the audience, they make referrals within there. And that's true of a lot of niche audiences, and you'll find that the fastest growing professional service firms are ones that tend to have a clearly defined audience and tend to be a relatively narrow one, because the narrower and more defined it is, the easier and faster it is to grow.
Okay. I agree. I mean, I do marketing. I have people call and ask if I do, you know, can you help me reach government employees so I can sell them insurance? No, mm-hmm. Not what I do.
Right.
The second point is, this is the one I sort of referenced earlier. Cultivate more visible experts.
That's a great point. And by a visible expert, we mean someone who is obviously an expert in their field, and make them more visible. And that's usually through sharing more content with them, promoting them online and social media, in print. And we find that, you see, with professional service firms, their brand is really your reputation, you know, what people think about you and how visible you are. It's a reputation and visibility. So it's very difficult to build a professional service brand just simply by increasing your visibility, you know, taking a blimp and running around the beltway with the name of your firm on the side. While that may indeed, people will know, heard those letters or that name, they won't necessarily know what you do or what you're known for. So that's why having visible experts or making sure that the content travels with you when you're building your brand, that is what works for professional services firms.
Yeah, it's weird, but you know, the direct link between producing that content, commenting on other people's content, being out there, it's like joining an association and not going. What's the point?
Exactly.
You can be a subject matter expert, but if you live in your mom's basement with a bottle of Dr. Pepper and a box of Cheez-Its, you know, who cares?
Exactly. And who will know, and how will that help your firm?
Right.
And the answer is, it generally doesn't, unfortunately.
Yeah. So the point three then is producing that content that supports the differentiator and showcases the expertise.
Exactly. And that can be anything from, you know, writing the definitive book on the topic to producing, video or a must-read industry blog or anything along the lines that really sets your organization apart on that particular issue or topic.
Yeah, it's this part's weird, because my first been live, and you'd figure a market like the government contracting arena being as big as it is, there would be a lot of books out there. Government Marketing Best Practices was self-published, and it sold over 10,000 copies. But what it was, it wasn't a profit center for me. It was the best business card I could ever produce.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all I did, frankly, was record a session of the seminar of the same name and have it edited, and we had the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a pretty good book nonetheless. But
yeah, and I think that's the thing that people don't understand about sharing the content, is even though, one could look at that and say, oh, well, you've got the seminar and people pay to be a part of it and you're giving it away as a book, isn't that going to hurt your seminar? isn't that going to, you know, ruin you? The people won't come consult you because you've given them, you've told them the idea. And I suspect that your experience was quite the opposite.
Oh, very much so. And so I continued that with the last book. People were saying, man, you're telling people how you do everything. Going, yeah, but they're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. They need their handheld.
Yeah, and if all you're going to do is just tell them how to do it, and if you're not telling them, somebody else is going to.
Right. You know, I can. You have the roadmap. You might still need the navigator.
Exactly.
So you've got a couple other excellent points here, too. The video and webinar series. And, you know, webinar series, what do you mean by that?
Well, webinars are another thing that a lot of times professional service firms misunderstand. They think a webinar is an opportunity to try to sell people on their product,
mm-hmm.
which is, of course, the absolute wrong way to do it. You know, the purpose of a webinar is to educate them on a topic and to give them a chance to hear how you approach the topic, how you think about it, what are the issues that are involved with it. And generally, the more our experience is, the more useful information you give, the better the attendance at subsequent webinars, and the more likely you are to get new business out of it. So it becomes a very useful relationship in that the people that listen are benefiting. They're learning something about the topic, and you're benefiting as well. So I think it's really a win-win situation.
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left here, so other points in this category are the blog and the newsletter, and you do both. We've touched also on conducting groundbreaking research.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of interesting because a lot of people think that, you know, well, everybody already knows this.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and they don't, of course. You take whatever is the most challenging or difficult issue that people keep asking about or keep running into a problem, and you begin to research that. That's where you not only learn something so that you're more valuable, but you become the source they turn to. That's the firm that understands this topic. That's the firm that's blazing the new trail into, whether the topic is, security or, healthcare information system or whatever the topic may be.
Okay.
That's how leaders act.
There you go. In order for you to find out the fifth point in this blog, I suggest you go to hingemarketing.com because we are running out of time. Lee, thank you very much for joining me today.
It's been my pleasure, Mark.
And you can find Lee Fredrickson at hingemarketing.com or on LinkedIn, Facebook, Google+, or Twitter. Thanks again, Lee. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center. This is not my day job. If your company needs to maximize the power of LinkedIn or ensure your marketing program is paying top dividends, drop me a line at federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.